need to record me, all right? No, it's all right. I'm Tim Loss, chaplain for the St. Louis City and County Juvenile Detention Centers and also for the city's long-term treatment facility, which is called a school for boys. It's in Spanish Lake, which is in the northern part of St. Louis County. I guess in terms of agenda, and we have, what, about half an hour or so to talk? Okay. In terms of agenda, I might just take a couple minutes and describe my own background and how I came to be where I am in terms of ministry and pastoral care, and then to talk a little bit specifically about the institutions that I serve, and at that time allow you an opportunity to ask me questions about the juveniles themselves and the type of care they receive and my role there. And then I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what you might do, very specifically in terms of what we might call volunteer pastoral care, something of the order of which John is now doing. And then lastly, and I think most importantly, talk to you about what you can do through your parish to provide pastoral care for the same kinds of kids that I work with in the institution. John is correct. I did graduate from Concordia Seminary here in 71. And like most of you will be, I was sent to a very isolated outpost in eastern Tennessee. Now, you may not be sent to eastern Tennessee, but most of you are going to be sent to some pretty isolated places. It was a tremendous experience for me. I served in the Appalachian area in East Tennessee for 5 years. I left there and returned to St. Louis and enrolled at Eden Seminary in their Doctor of Ministry program in pastoral counseling. Part of that program involves taking what you call clinical work, either at Lutheran Family and Children's Services or at Care and Counseling, which is an ecumenical mental health center in West County. I've been doing that for 2 years in order to, however, matriculate into the program and to follow it through for the two-year program. It was necessary for me to find part-time work. Frankly, St. Louis is not a place where it's easy to find part-time parish or chaplaincy work because, of course, there's so many Lutheran ministers floating around. Fortunately, through care and counseling, there was one part-time chaplaincy position available, and I applied for it not really knowing too much about it, although I have an interest, always have had, really, in working with children. And as I began 2 years ago September, not only in the pastoral counseling program, but also in the chaplaincy, it was a full-time position, one full-time position divided between two part-time people who were going through the academic, two-year academic training program. About halfway through that program, as I suppose realized my own interest and needs and realized the needs of the juveniles and the institutions and also talked with the people who provide the major support, both economic and spiritual and moral or whatever, and most of those people are Episcopalian folks in this area because the chaplaincy to the juvenile institutions was started around the turn of the century by an Episcopalian priest. The Episcopalians continued that ministry for many, many years until about 10 or 12 years ago when Care and Counseling and the Episcopal City Mission joined, Care and Counseling providing mental health care and the Episcopal City Mission providing student chaplains who were not only supposed to be, of course, ministers, but also to have some insight into counseling and be able to relate to the special needs of the kids in the institutions. The theory was, for many years, that there would be one full-time position divided between two people, and there would be a rotating ministry. Unfortunately, as you might well recognize, that didn't make for much continuity. So when I started and I had an interest in the institution with its board of directors, meaning Care and Counseling and the Episcopal City Mission, as we began conversations about the future of the chaplaincy, it was decided that one full-time person should serve. So I was hired as a full-time chaplain this past, September, 2 months ago. And Not only was I hired as a full-time chaplain, but since there are three institutions, and as we perceived the challenge, at least in terms of hours, we looked at a 60-hour commitment, one full-time person to serve two institutions, and another, still another part-time person. So my associate, hired also this past September, is a Catholic nun, and she works primarily in the County Juvenile Detention Center. So we serve through what is called the Episcopalian City Ministry, or the Episcopal City Mission. We have a ministry that involves myself as a Lutheran and a Roman Catholic sister. And we divide our hours up in the different institutions. That's not particularly important for this afternoon's discussion. But in any case, we serve St. Louis County Juvenile Detention Center, St. Louis City Juvenile Detention Center, and the city's long-term treatment facility called the School for Boys. It's also called Missouri Hills, and it's located in Spanish Lake, which is pretty much right at the confluence of the Missouri and Mississippi rivers. That's pretty much how I came to be full-time chaplain, and although I've served part-time for 2 years, I've been full-time now for a couple of months. Might describe the institutions themselves. Detention centers, both county and city, are designed to be short-term locations where kids are detained until they are followed through, until they follow through the judicial processes, or until they go through judicial procedures. That may mean, for example, let's assume that any one of you is a juvenile, ages, anywhere up to age 17, because at age 17, people in the state of Missouri are no longer considered to be juveniles, but considered to be adults, even though, of course, they don't vote or have quite a number of other privileges that adults might have. At age 17, the state relinquishes custody of them, at least in terms of being juveniles. If we were to imagine that any one of you was out on the street and picked up shoplifting, for example, and let's assume that it's happened several times before, you might be picked up by an arresting officer, taken to either one of the detention centers, and then put in a special unit. At city, it's 4 days. At county, it's 1 day. And at that time, you are evaluated both in terms of the staff and your parents would be contacted if they're available, or guardians, they would be talked to. And as a juvenile, you would then be allowed to communicate to your lawyer, to your parents, if you have some kind of prior record, to probation officers. And it would be determined at the end of a 24-hour period in the county, or a 4-working-day period in the city, and of course over, say, Memorial Day, that could stretch as long as 7 days, detention period, before it's decided whether you're too much of a risk to society to put you back out into the community. If, for example, you'd committed an armed robbery and shot somebody, obviously a much more serious crime than shoplifting, the court, the hearing officers, may decide that it's not safe for you to be back out in the community. So following the 24-hour or 4 or 6 to 7 day period, at least in the city, following that detention period, you might then be kept in the institution until there's complete adjudication of your case. That may be as long as a couple of months. The period is diminishing for a couple of reasons, not because of the humanitarian spirit necessarily of the courts and the staff people involved, but because of federal law primarily. I've seen kids in institutions in city detention for as long as 90 days, awaiting some kind of a hearing or awaiting a final dispositional hearing. Reason the child might be there that long is because nobody knows quite what to do with him or her. That we might talk about a little later. In any case, the kids would then be kept, or you, for example, might be kept in the institution following your detention hearing for a period of anywhere from 14 days to a couple of months until the court finally decides what to do with you. The disposition may be that you're sent back home. you may be sent to another institution, which is what happens to most of the kids that are detained, because they're only detained if they have a record of some kind, sometimes a very long record. I might just add this in terms of difference between the city and the county detention centers. Now, and I do want to take a couple minutes to mention this to you. Most of you will not be in the city or county of St. Louis for very long. In fact, there's a tremendous difference in terms of treatment between the city and the county. The city assumes, and I think most juvenile institutions assume, that these are criminals, and they are treated punitively and pretty judgmentally with the assumption that the kids are bad and they ought to be punished. That's the prevailing philosophy in the city of St. Louis right now. The county is entirely different. The county assumes that when the child comes into that institution for whatever reason, that the child has a problem. And there are many people that are then mobilized to try and help that child, and of course his parents or guardians, to deal with whatever the problem may be. Obviously enough, practically all the kids have academic problems. So that's one of the first things that has to be dealt with. There are going to be home and family problems. There may be problems with mental retardation or some kind of organic brain damage. There may have been early deprivation or damage that child suffered in its life. All these things are taken into consideration, for example, at the county, when they have initial contact with the juvenile, whether it's a boy or a girl. The county assumes that child is going to need treatment from the time they first come to the institution until they're released at the end of a probationary period or at age 17. The county is part of a fairly well-integrated system throughout the state for attempting to help troubled juveniles. As I said, the city's philosophy is fairly different. The kids that come through the city detention center will oftentimes, and this is only for boys now, girls are sent into the state institutions, if they are sent into institutions, because the state has the only female institutions available, at least as far as the city is concerned. Child goes through the city detention center and then is referred to another agency. They may be sent to the school for boys, the one that I'm a chaplain at in the Spanish Lake area. This institution, unfortunately, to this day, continues its punitive attitude toward the children, that they are bad and they ought to be punished, and that's the only way they'll ever straighten out. In fact, that prevails in much of penology and in adult institutions as well. In any case, the kids, as they're sent on to Missouri Hills, and these are kids anywhere from 11 through 16, will be sent to the Missouri Hills Institution. They will be there for a period of at least one school year. If a child goes in right now, about the 1st of December, that child will be in that institution at least till the next summer, and probably a year to a year and a half. The thought being that they would stay throughout a school year, and with the recognition of the social workers and the administration at the institution, it's thought that as long as possible is better than as short as possible as far as incarceration is concerned. Because if you keep the child out of its environment, its negative environment, and perhaps a pretty hostile home setting, that the child is going to improve. Unfortunately, the child doesn't learn adaptive skills and an ability to develop socially. In any case, at Missouri Hills, we have now about 70 boys, ages 11 through 16. I might add this, that some of the boys at Missouri Hills are not there because they've been adjudicated criminal. Some of them have not done anything criminal at all. In fact, they may have been foster children, and for one reason or another have foster homes that have broken down. They've been unable to locate, the city's been unable to locate any additional foster homes, so the children are sent to this long-term treatment facility, primarily set up for treatment of kids who have committed criminal acts. And right now, out of the 70 kids that are there at Missouri Hills, you have about 10 or so that are really foster children, and unfortunately will be in institutions like Missouri Hills until they turn 17. One of the things that kind of leads on to one of my concerns through the chaplaincy, obviously that the chaplain at whatever institution provides pastoral care very much like any of us will provide in whatever setting. You have worship services, which we have on Sunday morning at both Missouri Hills and at City Detention Center and at the county during the week. We have Bible classes. We meet in groups, meet individually, particularly when children are suffering from the grief and loss and fear of coming into the institutions for the first time. Oftentimes, though, the chaplains are involved in trying to stimulate the administration to providing better care for the kids. And this is something we're especially doing at Missouri Hills. The county does a very good job at this point, in my opinion. Missouri Hills as an institution needs a lot of help. And the kids there need a lot of help, especially, as I've discovered, the foster children. And one of the things that I approached John Bauer about several months ago was being, you might call it a big brother kind of relationship, but it's really much more than that. Because, of course, a big brother doesn't necessarily involve himself in any kind of spiritual emphasis or spiritual care. One of the things that we've tried to do through the chaplaincy is have people available to invite the children away from the institution on weekends occasionally, or to invite them into their own homes. If you happen to be resident here at the seminary, then that would be the home that you would invite the kid into. It's not at all easy, of course, to be a volunteer like this, because the kids themselves sometimes are so damaged because of their past histories that oftentimes it's almost impossible for anyone to humanly take that responsibility unless they're very well equipped for it in a number of ways. John has volunteered to take one of our kids who would never normally be away from the institution. And I think you have to picture the Missouri Hills Institution as a very isolated community. Those kids that don't have families in town or don't have relatives or friends who are able to come out and take them away from the institution simply stay there day after day after day, or month after month after month, even on holidays. John is being a pastoral big brother, if we might call it that, with one of the boys who has almost no contact with his family anymore, and probably won't, as I understand it. I don't think that he has much of a family left anymore. I guess his mother passed away recently. I don't know if anybody knows the whereabouts of the father or other relatives. So you have several boys in this situation. We also, and I guess particularly because of my efforts, are now trying to find people to help kids who are leaving the institution, kids who are either turning 17 or who have been in the institution anywhere from 6 months to a year and a half, to help them find jobs in the community, to help them get along a little better in school, although most of them will never do particularly well in school, to maybe help them in terms of adapting to the community. Particularly, my concern is that when many of the children leave the institution, they have no real community support. They're isolated when they come in, and unfortunately, they're isolated when they leave. The city of St. Louis provides no aftercare. So for some of the kids, for example, the boy that John is working with, this boy is now 14, right? He's been in institutions at least a year and a half. So you'd have to assume he went in when he was around 12 to 13. He might be at Missouri Hills another 6 months, maybe toward next summer. At age 15, the city will do its very best to find some place for him with some relative, even if it's a distant relative. Although this boy doesn't show so much isolation, you can imagine if the city simply turns him out after 2.5 years of being in institutions, that he's going to have a pretty hard time. He might have an even harder time if he's an adult at age 17 and really has no family to return to or no friends, and some of the kids are in that situation. Unfortunately, most of the kids just are left to their own resources, and they have pitifully few resources, emotionally and intellectually. Spiritually, they may have had almost no contact with a supportive, spiritual, caring, and loving community. One of the things I've tried to do through the chaplaincy is to find people who will be able to be pastoral big brothers to those who are leaving the institution, to work with them as long as possible, to help them become accustomed to, for example, working, to help them find a place to live, if that's necessary, even more, to help them locate in a congregational setting where they're going to receive much uplifting and caring support. Most of them have never had it. And in fact, if they do have it, sometimes they're scared of it. Because for many of these people, for many of these juveniles, when they are in communities, they feel they're just going to be rejected and ousted. So it's kind of a challenge for them to be in a community, but it seems to me there is no better community for them to be a part of than a Christian community and a solid, caring congregation. That kind of goes through the first three things that I wanted to mention. I do want to add this. I wouldn't expect that too many of you, for a variety of reasons, would be able, or perhaps willing, to provide pastoral big brother relationship with some of the kids. But to all of you, I think there's... I would like to lay this on you as future pastors. It doesn't make any difference whether you're in a rural area or in an urban area. The kids that have problems are largely out of touch with Christian congregations. We all know well enough that people who cause the most trouble in churches are the least received. And it's especially true for juveniles. People don't generally know what to do with kids who cause problems. And yet they're the very kids that need the most care. They're also the kids that that pastors and members of congregations either are not aware of or feel uncomfortable with. And I guess I would encourage you as you move out into your own communities, whether it's a short-term vicarage commitment or whether it's a permanent pastoral commitment, that somehow you look around in the community that you're a part of and determine, ideally, of course, with the help of your congregation, to determine how you might provide support and care in a spiritual ministry and pastoral care to kids who are desperately in need of it. One of the first evidences, and I'll give you a hint about how to go about it, one of the first evidences of problems with kids is in school. When you move into your local communities, if you have contact with the schools, with principals or teachers, and most everyone has teachers in their own congregation, you might check with them about the kids who really have problems academically. That's the first sign, and it'll show up, obviously, in kindergarten, first and second grade, and from there on, some of the kids will just go downhill. They are often lost, but at that period in their lives, oftentimes the churches can really help, not only providing care for the juveniles themselves, but, of course, for the families, too. It's sometimes the families will readily agree they need help and will accept it through the church. Yes. In the institutions. Right. Let me say, you had a two-part question. The latter question, which has to do with a personal relationship with Jesus, that's something we always emphasize through the chaplaincy. One of the things I think is important to say, oftentimes the kids have very little, and the juveniles, I'm sure it's true for the adults too, they have very little idea of what it means to be with anybody who cares about them. So when we talk about having Jesus with them or sensing God's presence in any way that's positive, often they have tremendous difficulty with that. And I think it's well nigh impossible for them to accept Jesus as their Savior or to have that kind of a caring, loving relationship with Jesus, with God, that we all have, unless they perceive that somehow through us God is active and God is providing love and care. I'm sure that in your work with the adults and juveniles too, that they would not have been responsive, spiritually speaking, unless they sense that you and other people in your congregation or in other congregations were interested in them and really cared about them. It seems to me that really has to come first. Now we rely much, of course, on the communicated word and the power of the Spirit, and all that is efficacious, of course. But I don't think it can really happen unless somehow, at least I don't think it can very effectively happen, unless somehow we have a personal relationship with those people in which they sense that God is active in our life and can also be active in theirs. And I think that gets to the very first, to the first question you had about right. I think it has to be a continual support base. You know, in the ministry use the idea of the coals and the community, Christian community, providing God's support and love and warmth for one another. And I think that's most important for institutionalized people because they are isolated. And they will continue to be isolated as long as they're there. But if if we have an opportunity to help them help one another in a supportive, spiritual way and continue to provide that care, then they're going to sense it no matter how long they're in the institution. And they're going to carry it with them as they leave the institution. I think that's why it's so important to have the community, the supportive community, available to them, not only when they're in the institution, but especially when they leave. Most of these people learn like, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but it's a little like being in the Army all your life. You can learn to rely on much discipline and much structure. To a certain extent, the institutions are havens, and they can be very secure. When people move out into the community, if they don't have some real solid support, they may not make it, simply because it's much more comfortable and secure for them to be back in the institution, no matter how hostile an environment that may be. You have, I think, and maybe we can generalize, you have two categories of people in the institutions. You have those that have a sense of conscience and have a sense of remorse and a sense of guilt when they do things wrong. That's not the kind of individual you're talking about. You're talking about the category that we might call sociopathic, also called psychopathic. For these people, whether they're kids or adults, and of course we see them very, very often in juvenile institutions, I'm not sure that unless you have a great deal of intimate contact with them, that they're ever going to change very much. For them, you come down much more heavily on the law than you do on the gospel. They don't know too much, they don't perceive much of what it means to be forgiven, because they don't have a sense of doing anything wrong. About the only way that you can really deal with people like this is to make it clear that if they do anything wrong, and the laws are very clearly spelled out, if they do anything wrong, they're going to be punished for it. Many of the institutions that deal with sociopathic individuals, especially as juveniles, and since that's the area that I'm most expert in, I think I can describe for you how the sociopathic individual is handled in those institutions. Kids' privileges are taken away if they do things wrong. That's on the, maybe you might say, on the negative side of it. On the positive side of it, there is constant encouragement and support to realize that what they're doing is wrong, and to help them to sense or to feel with the other person that they are hurting them. That may be an impossible order for some of these people, like the fellow you described. In terms of rehabilitation, in terms of what we might call typical pastoral care, it may be very hard to reach them with God's love and care. For them, you may have to come down much more heavily on the law side and say very simply, you've done something wrong in terms of society, and you will be punished for it. Now, I think you can ask them, you know, do you really want to be sent back to an institution? I mean, is this the kind of life that you want for yourself? No one, none of them will say yes. And maybe at that point you have a way of getting through to where they're at least thinking about what they're doing. But I think most of the time it's in terms of punishment if they do the wrong thing. Does that get to you?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. That's right. Yeah, you have the beginnings of institutionalization. What state were you in, by the way? Oh, interesting. The state of Missouri has, now the state, not so much the city, but the county and the state has a different philosophy. I haven't seen any country clubs, the institutions that I visited throughout the state. In every case, on a state level, kids are only released from the institution. Well, they only gain privileges. They're only released from the institution after they go through certain stages of demonstrating that they will live responsibly for themselves and with other people. And technically, and I'd be glad to refer a book to you called Positive Peer Culture, which forms a theory for the state of Missouri and for many other states as well. I think it works pretty effectively. Obviously, you don't deal with kids that may be as severely damaged as the ones you're talking about, but oftentimes it does help the socialization process tremendously. Yeah. Maybe that's why Jesus feeds us, huh? Anybody else have any questions or comments? Yes. Mary Grove. No, it's a private institution operated by the Sisters of the Good Shepherd, I think is what it is. No. It is different than what they're doing. They provide basically custodial care, not treatment. Now, they might take real exception if they were here in the room, but that's my opinion. Unfortunately, well, my criticism of that institution has much more to do with it being basically a maternal facility for obvious reasons. Most of the, well, practically all the girls that go there have problems relating to men. And that problem is never helped much because they're in a maternal institution, maybe with other people who also have problems with men. Yes. Give me your name and number, and we'll give you a call. I don't think we probably have time today to work out the details, but I'll give you a call, and we'll arrange to meet again and work it out. Most certainly can be done. Any other questions or comments? I guess it's about time for people to depart, huh? I want to say it's been a real pleasure to be here and to have the opportunity of addressing you. I wish you all well in your vicarages and your pastorates.
Thank you very much. Just two quick announcements. Tomorrow there will be a convocation after chapel in Pritzloff Hall. The person addressing us is going to be Dr. Westcott, who is now the executive director of the mission board. He's just been there for less than a year now, I think. Just last, last spring he was appointed. He was hired there, so it'll be interesting. And then in the afternoon there's going to be opportunities for people interested in finding out what kind of possibilities there are in missions to meet with Dr. Westcott and Reverend Herbold. Next Tuesday, we're going to have a man from Concordia Tract Mission speak to us about the use of tracts in the congregation or in the pastor's ministry. So that'll be good, too. I think he's going to have some tracts he's going to bring along and things. I don't know exactly what he's going to have for us. So with that, have a good day. Thank you.